Hi, I'm Marilyn Smith. We're taking a look at the Columbus restaurant scene on All Sides Weekend. Joining me this morning, just in the nick of time, Rich Terapek, our restaurant reviewer here at WOSU, and a special treat, our former restaurant reviewer, Jim Boudreaux, who's also a cooking instructor and a great volunteer here in the community, very generous with your time. In the interest of full disclosure, Jim does have an interest in City Barbecue, because not beyond your grilling interest.
Right.
And it's just something we should bring up. Not to date anybody at the table, but Jim and I did this 100 years ago? 150?
150, I think.
Let's see, Rich started 13 years ago?
Something like that, yeah.
And Marilyn and I did this show for 14 years prior to Rich's 13 years ago.
So, oh, my gosh.
I think 14 and 13 is
27
years worth.
Yeah.
So 20, 30, that would be back
and to
in
think
the,
we're all still young and
back in the
spry.
80s.
And,
yeah, and still eating, you know, it's amazing.
But we first started
solid food
doing this, there were pretty much slim pickings. You know, a new restaurant would come to town every once in a while. The way it's been in the last 15, 20 years, it's been absolutely remarkable.
It's gangbusters.
The explosion of restaurants.
I remember when Kent Rigsby sent out his partnership offering circular, and I saw it when, you know, he was the chef at Lindy's and decided to do Rigsby's in the Short North. And my at that time, my advice to my clients was, who in the world would ever go to a restaurant in that horrible part of town? And he was the pioneer. He defined as the guy who takes the arrows in the back, mm-hmm. of course. And he set off, I mean, there's one example of not only the scene, but an entire part of town is unlike we could have imagined 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I worked in that neighborhood back in the 60s. My dad worked at the United Commercial Travelers, and I was a stock boy during the summer. And I'd walk over to North High Street, and it was Skid Row. There were guys sleeping in the doorways, you know.
Well, I think the only thriving business was the plasma center, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's Phillips Coney, which is still there, I think.
Yeah.
That was the only place to eat lunch.
Right.
The other place, not quite the same neighborhood, but one that is where there was a pioneer, is Hubert Seifert and Spaggio, then the Gourmet Market, as mm-hmm. I recall, in Grandview. And he was the first in that neighborhood. I'm sure the Wagenbrenner brothers really appreciated him coming, because it's gone crazy. And Grandview is just one restaurant after another. So.
And if you just think about the cycles of things, now conversation is around Franklinton, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What a cool thing that would be for us to see.
Oh yeah.
Out of what is seemingly a tough part of this city, but I mean, just think of it. It's literally across the bridge.
Right.
It's just, I mean, Kosai is there. WSU is there, and Kosai, of course. Mm-hmm. The proximity is there. The river's there. We're going to do cool things with the river, even more so than the Scioto Mile, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll catch on. 229 is there, and I think everybody can see the other side of the river.
I think one of the most driving forces is the extraordinary explosion of diversity in this community, unlike we've ever seen, and unlike maybe even other places. I understand that there was a conference recently, maybe yesterday or the day before, around this whole matter of our diverse population, and that we actually have more diverse population now. Not a history of ethnicity, as does Cleveland and Cincinnati, but more diverse population than either of those two communities now, because of the wonderful attraction that our city brings to people who are opportunity seekers. It's like Portland, for example. Our friend Hartmut Hanke's daughter was in Portland, and she reported that the growth and the dynamism, if that's the word, of restaurants and food in Portland was a function mostly of how friendly it was to the entrepreneur who had never done it before. So the cost of entry, the mm-hmm. risk of entry, was lessened by the community's extraordinary embracing. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing in Columbus on our ethnicity front.
Well, it wasn't too long ago that we had Steve Stover on, who, with his wife, drove up and down Bethel and must have caused near accidents everywhere they slowed down, taking notes, but counting the number of ethnic restaurants along that strip. And we have callers just about every month when we do this show who comment on a restaurant on Bethel Road.
So
a prime example of what you're talking about.
Exactly.
And it's those shopping centers where there's a lot of them there, and there's some empty space. So as Jim says, the cost of entry is far less. And Columbus Square Shopping Center has a bunch of them on the northeast side of town. It's great that we have so many Asian and Hispanic and Indian, as our friend John Christensen will tell us about each time. It's just been a wonderful thing. You almost can't keep up with it. I can't.
We're talking with restaurant reviewers Rich Terapak and former restaurant reviewer Jim Boudros, who's graciously joining us this morning. 292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And, of course, we're talking about food and restaurants.
Jim mentioned Franklinton, and I don't know if anyone else has been over to Dine and All, which is a lot of fun. It's just about two blocks west, I guess, on Main
Street. It's at 400 Rich Street.
Rich Street.
In an artist colony.
Yeah. And it's an old manufacturing building of some kind.
Plumbing.
And they've taken, a little appendage and created a really neat little dining room with common tables and, all mixed up chairs and that kind of thing. And they have at least two trucks a day. They rotate them, so you won't find the same food there. So it's a lot of fun.
I think the building to which this dining hall is attached is a functioning artist colony of small spaces for artists who need roof over their head, so to speak.
Well, of course, a lot of people who live in apartments don't have the studio space there. This is a probably fairly inexpensive way of creating a studio, having a place to keep all of your supplies and whatnot.
That's right. Well, it's a neat idea, and it's morphing in many ways. For example, the old Shell station at Kenny and Lane has simply invited trucks, and they've shown up.
That's great.
And how cool is that? So now you don't have to find a truck. You can simply go to a spot, and you'll have a likelihood of finding something that would. And trucks are as we talked about the idea of an easy way to get into the business. Mm-hmm. That's also the explosion.
And apparently there are more than 100 of them now.
Yeah, I think Bethy was telling us there were like 104 now, and that was probably as of a couple of weeks ago.
So do we have a traffic problem here? Do we have too many trucks?
Well, Bethia Wolf has a business around trucks.
Yeah.
I think maybe 3 years ago, she started Columbus Food Adventures. It was a taco truck tour, and now it's morphed into more tours around town. And what a cool idea.
Yeah.
292-8513. You can email us at WOSU, at allsides@wosu.org. We are talking about food and restaurants. I did a story on Dine and Hall about 2 weeks ago and was able to meet the cooks that were over there. It's really very, very interesting. One food truck called Freedom a la Carte is dedicated to victims of sex trafficking. This is a way of giving these women skills and a job and a way of kind of getting back into society. The other one that was there that day was Ajumama, and I think that you ate there when you went.
Right. It was sort of a crepe with lots of stuff thrown in it and vegetables, some pork. It had a great, as I remember, it had a little sauce that came with it that had some heat and was just terrific. You can't find a lot of it downtown, and it is downtown. I'm probably less than a half mile away from there by my office, and it's just great to have around. I'm hoping the idea that Jim mentioned about the gas station opening its parking lot to the trucks picks up on the east side, Mayor Kessler.
the 09 desert, as we call it.
We've got a big lot at the corner of Parkview and Main, right across the street from the strip.
Yeah, where the Bexley Market is on Thursdays.
Yeah.
What is that municipal property? Is it private?
Oh, it's private.
I think it's private. I think it's owned by the folks who built the large...
The Plaza Properties folks built the...
Larry Rubin's.
Gateway on the on the north side of Main Street.
Well, maybe you want to relocate. In the course of doing the story on Dining Hall, or Dining Hall, as it's called, I did find out that there's another brewery near Gahanna and the Grandview Yard, that area, on Norton. I think it's called the Zauber Brewery, and they're bringing in trucks either around dinner time or later in the afternoon and serving their beer along with it. So it's an idea that's, you know, sprouting up. It's
an offshoot or an application of trucks is that we're going to parties now, snazzy parties, where the food is provided by trucks. Mm. Trucks are going to private parties, to country clubs, to fundraising parties. We had, for example, a big celebration last year at the Columbus Foundation, and we looked outside, and trucks had pulled up along the parking lot entrance to the Columbus Foundation and provided some of the food, at least the hors d'oeuvres, for that nice event. That's a really neat thing.
Our neighbors yesterday had a party for their kid who was graduating from middle school or, I guess, elementary school. All his friends were there, and they had a taco truck pull up.
Yeah.
I asked Roberta if she went over. She said, no, I can't do that.
What happens, though, in the case of the Columbus Foundation? Can people pull up off the street and also?
Well, it was seemingly private. I mean, it wasn't on the street. It was on the inside part of the parking lot. Street. Yeah.
292-8513. We're talking about food and restaurants here in Central Ohio. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking today with Rich Terapak and Jim Boudreaux. How about cooking courses? Either one of you have anything coming up?
Well, Steve and I do classes at
Steve Stover,
and I do classes at the Franklin Park Conservatory in the Educational Pavilion. The next one, I believe, is July 31st, and we're trying to use things out of the garden, their garden, and Jim's garden. Jim has a garden there, so we'll just go out and grab some of his aubergine or something, and so that's fun. We do about, I think we're up to 5 classes now a year. Jim helped out the last time. It's a lot of fun. It's a great setting. If you haven't been out to that corner of Franklin Park, it's a wonderful setting.
I have 4 Sundays beginning next month in the Live Fire Cooking Theater, a very cool place right in the middle of the new community garden, this new Scott's Miracle-Gro community garden at the conservatory. We built what is a venue of all the elements of historical live fire cooking. So if you can imagine what those would be, you would have a campfire for sure, where we do marshmallows, s'mores for sure, and then tripod cooking and other cooking. For example, I've got this enormous paella pan we put over the campfire, which is traditional in paella. We have a wood oven for pizzas. I mean, practically, that's what we're using it for. But, of course, a wood oven can be used for any kind of roasting or bread baking. We have a snazzy, specialized cooking fireplace called a Rumford, where we do pot crane cooking and cooking in which we dangle something like a leg of lamb on a string in front of the fire. And because of the Earth's rotation and the asymmetry of this leg of lamb, the thing spins on its own vertical axis right in front of the fire.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
No, it's really historic. It's what the French did.
Cosi's jealous, by the way.
It's what the French did a la ficelle by the string back in the old days when there weren't little boys or dogs to run around in a squirrel cage to move a spit around, or before Leonardo invented the spit system. We have a big green egg for smoking and another big piece of equipment called the Aztec Grill, which is a wood-fired grill. So we have the live fire cooking theater, and on 4 Sundays starting next month, I'll be cooking on a Sunday just for people who come to the conservatory. It's free and no reservations.
The other thing he sometimes also brings along is his latest Yakitori grill, just in case you needed more than six in one location.
So do you get these all fired up at the same time?
Usually not. Usually a couple. Usually a couple of things, so we can demonstrate how you use live fire to cook things, which is, this is within the culinary garden of the community garden. So we have all these wonderful vegetables and herbs surrounding the live fire cooking theater. So it's a sort of perfect symbiosis kind of thing. It's really fun.
Well, it sounds fascinating, too. And as you say, the history that goes into it and the science.
Yeah.
292-8513. And we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back in just a moment.
In Washington, D.C., people are so busy hating each other, they forget to take the time to despise each other. Well, this week, Wait Wait goes to the nation's capital and will bring everyone together. Because if there's one thing liberals and conservatives can agree on, it's that it's funny when a guy puts on sunscreen and it bursts into flame. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us as we heal the nation on this week's News Quiz from NPR.
And Wait Wait Don't Tell Me tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today with a high of 84. Clear skies tonight, a low of 59 degrees. More sunshine on Saturday, a high of 87. And even warmer on Sunday, sunshine and a high near 90.
Support for 89.7 comes from Lenovo on Long Condos, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District featuring green design buildings within walking distance of local stores and restaurants. Details at homeportohio.org/Lenovo on Long.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking about food and restaurants with restaurant critic Rich Terapak, who does our restaurants currently, and former restaurant critic and grill master Jim Boudreaux, who we're delighted to see back here at the table. Shannon has been waiting patiently. Hi, Shannon. Go ahead.
Hi. I was curious if either of your guests knew of a place that had authentic Chinese fresh dumplings here in town.
As in dim sum kind of dumplings?
Yeah, I've been over to China and really, really enjoyed the 12 for a dollar, make them as you order them dumplings, and was not sure if dim sum would be something or if there was an actual just a mom and pop shop that did just dumplings here in town.
Well, one of the favorites from the east side, and Jim can tell me if it's still open because I haven't been there for a long time, is Sun Tone Lock out in Reynoldsburg, right off of Bryce. Is that correct?
Yeah. In Sun Tong Luck is mostly a Cantonese Chinese restaurant with everyday dim sum. Not the buns that you're thinking of. Not the kind of a dozen for a dollar that you're thinking of.
But maybe a little more.
But dim sum in the sense, but recognizing that what you asked about might be classified in the dim sum category, that's where classic dim sum is. Rich, I'm struggling to remember the name of the Chinese restaurant that is off of I'm drawing a blank now.
There are others, I know, and if I remember to bring my guide along, I could kind of find them. But there are, I think, a couple to be found up in that Bethel Road area that we were talking about.
Bethel comes down and makes an angle move around Bravo, right?
Yep.
The original Bravo.
Yep, right.
There's a substantial, I'm so embarrassed I can't remember its name, Chinese restaurant there, and it's on Sundays. It's just packed for its wonderful Sunday brunch, late Sunday morning and early Sunday afternoon, with Ohio State professor and student people, especially Chinese, who come for its authentic. And I'm really sure they have the buns that you're talking about there.
And that's the traditional time to day of the week to eat them as well. Sunday brunch seems to be the time when they pull out all the stops. So.
As I say, I'm so embarrassed that I can't think of the name. But anyway, it's right off of. Is that Bethel the continuation that drives by Bravo? If you go to where Bravo is on that, is it turn into Hayden there?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a strip shopping center. It's right in the middle of the strip on the north side of the parking lot. So you can go in there. Just go. just go on my recommendation. You'll be very satisfied and pleasantly surprised to find this really first class Chinese kitchen.
Well, good luck, Shannon. We hope we hear from you again. 292-8513.
Shannon, would you drive by it right now?
I was just down there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We have an email here from Jason who wants to give a shout-out to Fresh Street Yakitori in the back of Double Happiness in the Brewery District, a delicious Japanese street food and a fun bar. And this is the kitchen that the women at Freedom a la Carte are actually using to prepare their food for their food truck.
That's right. I was there. Maybe a month or so ago, a month and a half or two ago. Great yakitori and small Japanese plates. In Japan, workers leave their jobs late afternoon and go to these yakitori bars, so to speak. Sometimes just outdoor places, and bits of meat and things on skewers are cooked in front of them over charcoal, and that's exactly what they're doing there. And they have, wonderful soups, Japanese-style soups, as well as things that you would think of in hors d'oeuvre category, or dim sum category if they were Chinese. But they're,
or tapas if they were Spanish.
Tapas if they were Spanish. That's exactly right. Yeah. And speaking of yakitori, that's the name
that's
of
the,
it. Yakitorium.
And this is the, I think it's called Double Happiness, and it's in the Brewery District, and I'm not quite sure where, but I
can tell you exactly where it is. You remember where the brewery, the original brewery was? It's, I would
the
say.
Anheuser-Busch Brewery?
No, no.
Gambrinus is what I'm thinking.
50 yards south of Livingston, front of Livingston, on the east side of the street, right across from Wasserstrom.
Oh, well, that's pretty specific.
Yeah.
292-8513, and let's see, Mark is joining us from Pickerington. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to find out if anybody on the panel has been to the Hidden Lakes Winery in Canal Winchester since they got a new chef and changed the menu.
Can't say that we have.
Say the name again.
Hidden Lakes.
It's Hidden Lakes Winery.
And they have a restaurant.
They have a restaurant. They actually make the wine on premises. They're up against the lake, hence the name, and it's a nice place to go.
Yeah, it's good to know about. No, I haven't heard about it. We always hear of a couple newbies every time. It's good.
I mean, that's what's the most unbelievable part. I mean, there are probably 100 callers who could call this very minute and say, "Have you been to?" And we'd have to say no, even though we do that a lot and we eat out a lot.
We try.
It's unbelievable how many places are here. In the original days of Craig Claiborne, he was sort of the first original and authentic New York Times restaurant reviewer that wasn't on the payroll of restaurants. He was legitimate, and when he was operating, there were 25,000 restaurants in Manhattan alone.
Oh my gosh!
Wow.
So, well, that sort of begs the point. He was asked, "Where is your favorite restaurant among the 25,000?" And his answer was, "Where they know my name the best."
Well, we do have a similar email here from Fred who wants to know, what restaurant is your guilty pleasure? What place are you apprehensive to admit to enjoying that you might be scoffed at by other reviewers if they know that you went there?
Oh, wow. It has to be a greasy spoon someplace.
But as a preface to that, to answering that.
Guilty.
Last year, a famous food writer, a guy named Michael Ruhlman, who has been on some of Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations programs, co-authored famous cookbooks like Thomas
He's
Keller's.
Out of Cleveland.
Right. He did a piece about roaming around the Midwest, and he came to Columbus, and he went to Kihachi, with fabulous, just unbelievable Japanese food, semi-unknown by lots of people, but an extraordinary place. And he kind of badmouthed Columbus, and so Rich and I and a couple of others asked him to come to Columbus.
The food mafia.
The food mafia. That's right.
We said,
Rulon, get yourself down here. I think we bribed him with a couple of Penn State tickets. So on that weekend, he came down with a buddy of his, and we roamed around. But let me tell you where we took him for the first one. We took him to Los Gachos, the truck out on the west side. Los Gachos has this and this is not exactly a truck. It's semi-permanent in an old, dilapidated parking lot, not far from the new casino. And Los Gachos has, as is the tradition, from Mexico City, the El Pastor, the taco with the pork, spicy pork, on this vertical spit, like you see it at Verdue's and other places. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to impress this guy. That was our primary objective. But we knew we couldn't be, you know, we couldn't just take him to all the name places. So we hit Los Gachos first. And after we spent almost 2 days eating, and we took him to the good places too.
I think he
admitted that the best taste was the first one at Los Gachos.
Really?
Oh, he almost couldn't taste by the end of the day. We were feeding him so much.
No, we went to wonderful places. Name them down the line are the best. Some of the among the best places in Columbus: Rigsby's, Bossy, Elena's, Skillet, and
Pistachio Vera.
Thank you. and it was a wonderful weekend of food. But I think my answer to this specific question is sometimes what you want is not to sit down at a white tablecloth and have to order. Sometimes you want to go someplace, just like you would if you were going on your own picnic, and go someplace where somebody is making one or two things, just blaster out of the sight flavor stuff that satisfies you. And Los Gachos certainly does that. It's out on the west side. They have a standalone restaurant on Go Down, just north of Bethel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just opened about 6 months ago.
It's the food is the same, but it's not the same.
Because the atmosphere is better out on the west side.
Well, I think though, in a sense, when you're having somebody over who cooks and is a very good cook, you feel like you're not quite up to the task of preparing them dinner. But sometimes it's the very act of making dinner so they don't have to be the one that's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes these people
You're
very appreciative.
You're speaking to the choir.
Because you know, everybody counts on you guys at a party to cook the food because you're good at it.
Actually, people who are interested in cooking like more food than anybody else. So they're not critical. Unless you're going to be critical. That is,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You can pick apart anything, I suppose. But people who are interested in food have the broadest range of likes and are so appreciative of somebody who wants to invite them to dinner. And the other part about, people who like to cook, is that it's one of the most satisfying activities I can imagine. For me, it's what I it's the activity I like to do best of everything I can imagine. So, I mean, I love to cook. I jump at the opportunity to cook.
2928513, and we have Yasmin, I'm sorry, on the phone from Westerville. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. I wanted to know about some good Korean restaurants.
Well, we mentioned Aju Mama, which was one of the food trucks that parks occasionally at Dining Hall. And this was a woman named Laura Lee, who has a degree in hospitality from Kent, and then attended the Culinary Arts Institute, I think, in Phoenix. And this was her foray into to cooking, has her own truck, and I think was recently written up in the food section of the Dispatch.
The Dispatch, yeah, just several days ago. I think Till, the old dragonfly, is pretty green. You know, he is.
She was talking about Korean.
Oh, I'm sorry. I heard green. I'm sorry. I thought you meant something that was organically grown. Korean. I apologize.
That's why I was talking about Laura Lee.
What was the time?
The places I've been, once again, as I say, I'm embarrassed that I can't remember the names, are just north of Lane Avenue. On the west side of High Street, there's a wonderful Korean restaurant there. I haven't been in a couple of years, but when I was there, it was terrific. Just north of Lane Avenue on High Street on the west side of High Street.
Oh, okay.
West side of High. And then the other place is in the Bethel, the first Bethel Shopping Center. If you get off 315, you know, Bethel stops at 315, mm-hmm. So you go, only way you can go is westbound from that point.
Left for all the ladies in the audience.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And it's in that shopping center just west of where the McDonald's is on that corner. And it's in the middle of the shopping center. And they have these fabulous stone bowls. It's a traditional way of serving Korean things in a vessel that is itself part of the cooking. As a matter of fact, these stone vessels are put on the fire, on the open fire, to cook the things. So you actually eat in the pot in which the stuff was cooked, and it's wonderful. And one of the things I like about Korean food is that there's almost no dish that doesn't come with a whole range of condiments. So you'd never just get a piece of something. You get a combination of things, and then you get all these little dipping sauces and tastes and flavors that are just fabulous.
Does that help you?
Yes, it does a lot, thank you. And actually, the last restaurant I have been to.
The one we just mentioned, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you remember the name?
Since we couldn't.
I don't exactly remember, but I believe it was by a grocery store called, like, Arirang, something like that.
Okay.
It's difficult with all the Thai and Vietnamese and Korean restaurants. You know, it sounds so foreign to our ears that sometimes we just can't. You know,
capture the name.
Capture it and recall it.
Yeah.
292, thank you so much for your call today. 292-8513. You can email us at allsides at WOSU. And here's one from Matt. He was wondering if either one of you know about the shutdown of all but one of the Hoggy's restaurants in town.
I think the competition's pretty stiff. it's, you know, restaurants come and go. It was a good product. I know that they have closed in several locations. As a matter of fact, I thought they'd closed all of their stores. But they,
except the one on 62 out near New Albany.
Okay. The White Barn
location. Uh-huh. Right.
Things in the life of a restaurant, things change. And unless you have, you know, very specific items that are, you know, that you have all the time that people just love, it's difficult to keep things interesting and alive. You got to change the menu a lot. And I think they have a larger menu and they, you know, that can be tough. As Jim says, if you're just doing tacos that are especially great, you can keep going for a long time. But also the thing that it's happened to several of our good friends who are chefs, you have a couple of successes and then you want to have a lot more. Some who have tried that. I'm thinking of a couple of people who did that a number of years ago, and they came back to their original location, changed things up, and did just fine. So I hope that's what happens to Hoggy's.
We're talking about food and restaurants here on All Sides Weekend. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking with Jim Boudreaux and Rich Terapak, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Natasha Trethewey has been named the new U.S. Poet Laureate. On the next Fresh Air, we feature our interview with her. Also, we remember the prolific science fiction writer Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451. He died Tuesday at the age of 91. We'll listen back to our 1988 interview with him. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes starting at noon. This is 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the similarities and differences in the Ohio and Wisconsin union fights. Also, plans to privatize OSU parking, those topics and more. Tune in for Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 84, clear skies tonight and a low of 59 degrees. Sunshine on Saturday and a high of 87, and even warmer on Sunday. Sunshine with a high near 90. Be sure to visit WOSU.org/AllSides for the latest updates from All Sides with Ann Fisher. On the website, you can listen and watch the show live weekdays from 10 until noon. Also, be sure to explore the All Sides archive. It includes audio and video of every show. That's WOSU.org/AllSides. And All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking about food and restaurants on All Sides Weekend. And we're talking with restaurant reviewers Jim Boudreaux, a former restaurant reviewer here at WOSU, and our current restaurant reviewer, Rich Terapak. And we did get a helpful email from Jerry in Northwest Columbus, who was helping you, Jim, with your memory.
And the name Such of the, as it is.
Or your lack of memory. The name of the restaurant was Imperial Gardens.
Yeah, 2950 Hayden Road. That's okay.
For Shannon, who we hope hasn't taken off without this information.
Hope you're still there, Shannon.
She'll find it. It's good. That's great.
292-8513 if you have questions about restaurants in the area. Vi is joining us. Hi. You still there?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Imperial Garden, and they do have very authentic Chinese food, so be ready to see tendons and things like that. But they have a very good shrimp dish. Mussel dish is very good. But the other one is the Korean restaurant is Minga.
Minga?
Is that the one on Bethel?
Correct.
Yeah.
It's Minga.
Yep, you're exactly right.
Minga.
Yeah, they're two words. Minga.
Okay.
And then my recommendation is the Hilton at Easton on Fridays from like 5 to 10. They have a seafood buffet. I think it's for $32 per person, but you have oysters on the half shells, peeled shrimp, crab legs, and then you can have a pasta with the seafood. And the best thing is sashimi and sushi. And there's a chef there that prepares all these for free, and then of course you have the regular plus the salads and the soup and the desserts. But I just go for the oysters, and they do get not just Louisiana oysters, they sometimes have well fleet.
Oh, good.
Wow.
And they sometimes have Chesapeake Bay oysters too.
That's a good tip. Thank you.
Oh, yes, it is. And the sushi and sashimi is great. You can even have uni if you're lucky and are there first thing.
What time does it open?
5 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah, 5 o'clock tonight. And, $32, you can't beat that price.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my other favorite is Cuco's.
Oh, yeah, we love Cuco's as well.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And that's pretty good. And then in the North Market, we always go to Lanviet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For pho. For a wonderful pho there.
Oh, yeah. Boga. And we like lavash, of course, with Nasir. So I always love his shrimp wrap. So that's very good. And his lamb chops are excellent.
Well, thank you very much for your call and all of that information about area restaurants.
Yeah, great.
292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu. We have another caller on the line. John has been waiting for us here. John from Clintonville. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I for your caller that wanted Chinese dumplings, I recommend Ying's Tea House here in Clintonville. I always get the veggie tofu dumplings, and I think even meat eaters might enjoy those.
But, and where is that?
It's located on High Street, just south of Henderson. It's on the east side of High Street, just below Henderson. And they have a full line of dumplings. They do I don't know if she's more interested in buns than dumplings. I know they do buns, but I haven't really had those myself so much. But they do a great job with dumplings.
Well, we certainly hope that Shannon is still listening and not lost in the wilds. Thanks very much for that recommendation.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. 292-8513. And let's see, Richard is joining us. And you wanted to know about steak at a Japanese restaurant.
Exactly. Thank you very much. I always enjoy the intelligent conversation. I ate for the first time at one of the Japanese steak places where they cook in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I ordered filet mignon and lobster. I just have two quick questions, and I'll kick it off here. Is it appropriate to ask them not to chop up your boot and just leave a steak intact so that you do have like a pink rare center? That's the first question. And the other one is, can you normally expect such high-end restaurants to be choice beef rather than prime?
Because
the whole meal was about $37.50 with tax and tip.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you can tell the chefs at most Japanese restaurants
that are holding
anything.
Machetes.
That's right.
I think if you could try to get the maitre d' to interpret it for you. You know, if you're paying $37, you ought to be able to get what you want. And most will respond, but, you know, part of the Japanese restaurant experience is the theater.
Japanese steakhouse.
Right.
Steakhouse, yeah. I should, yeah, thank you. Steakhouse is the theater. So, yeah, they'll be reluctant to honor your request, but give it a try.
You know, it's hard to know about the question of choice and prime and
steaks. Yeah,
very
steaks. Difficult.
That's really, really hard to know. I would say most places are serving choice meat as opposed to prime meat. When I say that, I don't know that for a fact, but I would suspect so.
There is a significant difference in price, and not so much a significant difference in texture and taste. So, you know, it's the difference between a choice filet and a prime filet per pound is probably $7-$8 maybe additional.
Probably double.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for your call today, Richard. And Joe is waiting. And you want to talk about authentic foreign foods and how to know what's what.
Well, yes. And I did. I don't know if you found about the Korean restaurant on Bethel. There's one called Minga right in that little shopping center that McDonald's in. And there's one a little further down the road called Sansu. I'm not not sure which one you were referring to.
Minga,
Minga. But I do have a question about authenticity. We often discuss, you know, whether this is authentic Japanese food or authentic. Well, to a native, that's very important, or to someone who's well-traveled. But have you ever gotten into that issue, if you understand my question, as to authenticity versus taste, the local taste? Is that an issue that you've wrestled with at all?
Well, I think it's difficult who is the arbiter of authentic is the question, because there are so many variations in France by province, by neighborhood, et cetera, as to what's authentic in that particular area. It could be cassoulet that's made in Saint Remy versus cassoulet that's made in Cassis or something, and there could be a significant difference, but they're both authentic.
Well, I think.
And the question, one question I was asking is, does that even register with someone like a Columbus native who's never been to France or has never been to Shanghai, or as far as local taste versus authenticity? There seems to be a big premium put on authenticity, but is that really even the issue?
Kind of like art, if you like it. It's art. Yeah.
I think our experience here in Columbus, and I suspect most other places, would be most notable on this authentic scale in the Chinese world.
Okay.
You can imagine how a Cantonese chef would come in after World War II and and begin to cook Cantonese food. And pretty soon, the hot and sour soup isn't so hot, isn't so sour.
Right.
How the incredible tofu dishes in Canton kind of evaporate from the menu, because who the heck knows about tofu in Columbus or any place else for that matter? How the flavor profile is dumbed down to a place that's acceptable to the typical diner rather than to the person who's seeking out authenticity. That's why I was in particular interested in telling the earlier caller about the Imperial Garden, because for me, my interest is to go someplace to be wowed with flavors, and usually that's where the authenticity mm-hmm. happens, rather than food that is unseasoned and is
and the bland local fare.
Yeah, exactly.
Fatty.
I think here also we for example don't have many authentic Italian or authentic Mexican restaurants. We have a lot of Italian restaurants and a lot of Mexican restaurants, but when I say authentic, I mean like for example, Giuseppe Mangano at Giuseppe's in Bexley on Main Street is cooking food from his hometown. I mean, and he tells you that. And you may think it's the best or not the best, but the fact is it's his home cooking. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of that authenticity. I think it's up to the person to decide whether they like it or not. But as long as it's an authentic representation.
Right.
Tex-Mex, for example, in the world, I mean, we eat Tex-Mex here in Columbus mostly. But if you watch, for example, Rick Bayless on the Food Channel, you know anything about Rick Bayless and his fabulous restaurant in Chicago called Frontera and Tampalabampo, that's real Mexican food, and mostly from Oaxaca and other parts of the Yucatan. But mm-hmm. it's a world of difference.
By the way, I might mention the line.
pardon me.
Advocates of holding the line and letting you go in and sample and benchmark from there.
Yeah, exactly. Bayless has just opened a Frontera at O'Hare Airport in two places.
Oh, that's great, because you can never get in the other one.
Well, that's right. You have to go all the way into town.
Yeah.
And there
are no reservations, and you just...
And the food is absolutely the same food as Frontera.
Terrific.
At the airport.
That's great.
Wow. Okay.
Good.
Thanks very much.
That's a great question.
Thank you very much for your call, 292-8513, and we have 5 or 6 minutes left. We did get an email from Michael who was wondering, and I probably will mess this up badly, but if you tried or heard of Kolache Republic or Kolaches at all, for that matter, and someone at the Clintonville Farmers Market has recently begun selling these Czech pastries.
Hmm. Whoa. No. Said that word, K-O-L-A-C-H-E. It's not the word I know. I have a suspicion. No, I don't know it.
Yeah, and I should know it because half of my heritage is Czech, and I don't know it either. But I'm glad somebody's doing it, and we're going to have to go try them.
Yes, we'll have to look into that. Marty is joining us from Gahanna. Hi.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, first of all, it's Kolache.
Thank you. Well, goodness sakes, you've been sitting on the phone and you knew all about
it. Thank you.
Well, when you're raised in Cleveland, you know what a kolache is, honey. The other thing, I just have a recommendation for a dining experience, and I think it's so much more than just the food. But about a week ago, I went to Tucci's in Dublin and just had a wonderful bolognese. I always try to see how Italian restaurants make it and see if it matches up to mine.
Great.
But the experience of...
Should I have a little dairy product?
The experience of sitting out in their patio with all the roses was just wonderful. So I really highly recommend Tucci's.
This has been great weather for outdoor dining the last
couple weeks. Tell me, do we have another caller waiting?
We do. We've got a few minutes.
Tell me about what are the benchmarks for your bolognese?
I like a little cream in it.
Yep.
not overpowered with meat.
Right.
The pasta has to be just perfect. The sauce was wonderful. I don't like a heavy red sauce on bolognese. I can make it that way, but this was a little creamier.
Yep.
Just enough. Mm-hmm. I wasn't overpowering. And
more pasta than bolognese, right?
Yes.
I mean, more pasta than sauce.
Yes.
Like 3 or 4 to 1.
Exactly.
And mixed together, not just the bolognese on top.
Yeah. Right, right. It's right. Got to be layered properly.
Yeah.
So it was just a wonderful evening to sit out there with the roses and the service and the company.
Great.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Invite us next time.
Okay.
We might have to invite Marty on the show next time.
What's inside of a kolache? It's a Czech pastry, right?
Yes, you can do prune, you can do apricot. Those are the most typical ones. You can do a nut filling if you want to.
Is it bread-like or is it
it's a sweet dough with, it's made with sour cream, and it's quite sweet.
Okay.
But it should be
more like a Danish,
up,
as we would go. Yeah,
yeah, but it, yeah, and it is a soft pastry, but it's kind of wrapped up in four square. You put the four corners in the middle and push them down.
Uh huh.
And I've been dying to find some in
Clintonville.
Clintonville Market. Now I know. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
2928513. We have a couple of minutes left and one more caller, Matt. Hello, you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
I have a quick question, actually. I'm trying to find a good quality steakhouse in Columbus, and as easy as that seems to be, I went to Smith & Wolinski's with my girlfriend about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, spent about $300 and had the worst steak
of my
girlfriend.
Life.
Right? Right? But I was trying to find...
Go across the street to the diamond cellar, she'd probably be...
Is there something that's a little more medium-range price-wise that might be better?
We're going to plug something that's in the neighborhood and it's been around for about 60 years, and that's The Top on East Main Street. As a matter of fact, they have, I can't remember what night of the week, it's Monday or Wednesday, I think, where for about $25 you get a really good steak. They have great baked potatoes and a nice salad. It's been a steak hangout for a long, long time. John Christensen, I think, claims it's the best in town.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, there are lots of other snazzy ones, of course. Hyde Park. We lost Morton's.
Yeah.
I had what I thought was the best steak of my life at Morton's. It was across from Nationwide for many years.
And, oh, yeah.
But I had Morton's. I went to a Morton's as a guest in Chicago, and it was pretty wonderful. But Hyde Park does a good job. But I think just to balance your experience that Smith & Wolinski, from a money point of view, go to The Top.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be a pleasant surprise.
It's sort of walking back into the early 60s, but it's a real fun place. Somebody will be playing the piano, and it's got a great bar scene. You'll enjoy it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dustin.
Thank you very much for your call today, Matt. We've been talking about food and restaurants in the minute or so that we have left. Do either one of you know what's happening to the Hill's downtown grocery store? Apparently, it's been postponed. It was supposed to open this spring.
It's still on track. I just heard someone from Hill's, Jill from Hill's, do a presentation on it.
Oh.
They've been very thorough in their investigation of what people will buy. They've done surveys in I think all of German Village and Victorian Village as to what products people would like, etc. They're going to have drive through. You can call in your orders. They'll be
Where's it going to be?
It's going to be on a Grant and and K Street, I think. Yeah. And there'll be a restaurant next door. It'll be a tiki hut brought to you by Liz Lesner.
And this is opening in the spring?
Yeah.
A couple weeks?
No. It won't be till the fall. I'm sorry.
Oh, the fall. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for everybody who called today and who emailed us. We've been talking with restaurant reviewer Rich Terapak and our grill master, Jim Boudros, who's back at the table. I'm Marilyn Smith. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1 Columbus. Streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. News from NPR is next.